up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Iris and the Giant is the game for this week's episode. Iris and the Giant is a roguelite strategy tactical card game, and definitely some comparisons of games we've talked about before, like Frost, Dicey Dungeons, Black Book even. There's a lot of similarities in how some of the challenge levels go down there, as well as Inscription. The game was originally released in February of 2020 on PC and Mac, and then in November of 2020 it came to Switch, and then finally in March of 2023 it eventually came to PS4, Xbox One, Series X, and S. The game is out on Android. I've seen it on the Google Play Store. I do not have a release date for that, so I'm not sure when that came out. The game was developed by French solo dev Louis Rigaud, and I'm sure I messed that up. But he developed this game all on his own, and he has his own website. It's called ludocube.fr, and I've been there. And a lot of what he does, I think this is the main game that he's made. I don't think he's made a lot of other games, but he's done a lot of other interactive things for children specifically. Like, he does a lot of pop-up books where it's like interactive inside the book. And then he's also done like educational stuff, like apps. I think there's one educational app that has his name on it. So a lot of things for kids and really interesting. It's really nice and refreshing to see his website. So definitely go check that out. The game was published by a bunch of different places, so it's a little messy. I believe the PC and Mac ports were done by Goblin Studio, Mugen Creations, and Maple Whispering. So it's like three different publishing companies. I'm not sure which is responsible for the most part. But when it came to Switch, that was published by Plug In Digital, and I think we've heard of them before. And then the PS and the Xbox versions were done by Clay Bader. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that is a Polish publishing studio that's published a bunch of small games, some that we've actually seen before. The game was released on Steam with an MSRP of $17.99, but the console versions, including Switch, those are $14.99, so I'm not sure the price difference there. And seeing it on the Play Store, the Google Play Store, the Android version is $5.99. Again, I'm not sure when that released. Runtime of the game, if you're just running straight through and for some reason you're conquering everything the first time and just doing the story straight through, maybe like 6 hours, but you can definitely get lost in the loops in this game between 10, maybe even more than 15 hours. That's certainly where I'm headed at this point. And the game does have a platinum trophy, and I'm looking on PSN profiles, and I believe about 15% have gotten it, so that's pretty interesting there. I don't know if I'll go for it. I'm not really one to dive into these roguelite trophies, but it is a potential there. I've been playing this on PlayStation, and I got this on sale for $7.49, and I've put in probably more than 6 to 7 hours. I think I've done at least 10 or 12 runs through the game, but I'm progressing more each time. And in terms of recommendation, no one really recommended this to me. I had never heard of it, just saw it on sale, and I really loved the art style. It reminded me a lot of Dicey Dungeons, and I also liked the idea of tactical gameplay. Didn't really know it was a roguelite, so that kind of caught me off guard, but pleasantly surprised. right, let's talk gameplay for Iris and the Giant. So like I said, this is a roguelite, and in that respect, it's going to be similar to roguelite games we've seen before, where you're like doing a run to go as far as you can, and then you'll end your run, and whatever you did in it or how far you got will result in you unlocking different things that you can then have access to the next time around. So, and that's crossed with a card collector, and so we've seen games like this before, like Frost and Inscription, but I gotta tell you, this game has a lot more synergy with doing a run and kind of going on to the next run and what you unlock than those games, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, let's get through just the basic setup and the levels and how you're progressing through the game. So all the game is these individual levels, and it's a battle level, and it's basically going to look like you versus rows of enemies, and you're going to have to progress through them in order to get to the stairs to the next level. And the way the progression works is you'll be standing on one side, and then you'll see rows of enemies, and they're going to kind of work like a conveyor belt. So each column of enemies, and they can vary from having two columns, or some of the tougher levels will have maybe four or five. And what it does is it basically creates this grid, but everything only progresses forward towards you like a conveyor belt. And what's going to happen is you're going to have your turn, and then all the enemies within range are going to do their turn and attack. And on your turn, you can play cards, and we'll talk about how that works. And then as soon as you're done, the enemies will all attack. And then if the result had any enemies disappearing or dying or whatever, their spot will disappear, and then the enemies will move up, or anything that's in line on those conveyor belts. So that's basically the name of the game. You're killing enemies that are pushing the column forward, and then you're seeing what's coming up next. And on each of these spaces, like I said, it's kind of like a grid. Most of the time it's going to be enemies, but other times they're going to be like obstructions, like boulders that you can break by attacking them multiple times. And sometimes there'll be chests that you can open and get more cards. And then sometimes there'll be gems that you can pick up and other things that you can just interact with in the front row. And that's going to be something that you're going to do a lot, is anytime something is in the front row besides an enemy, you can interact with it. And so right away, you're going to see that there's some strategy, because there could be different things coming from different columns, and you might not want to advance some columns. You may want to advance other columns. And what's also good is that once you get the stairs to the next level, to the front, you don't have to kill any other enemies. You can just interact with it, and then that'll be the end of that level. And what's also good is that you can get stairs coming from multiple columns. So if you saw stairs that were in the back of one column, and you see this really tough enemy that you can't beat, and then all of a sudden you advance another column, and then you see that there are stairs there, you can kind of pick and choose your path. And along the way, you're going to do lots of things that you may have guessed. Your character is going to level up, quote unquote. You're going to be adding cards to your deck. You're going to unlock story elements and lore. You're going to unlock upgrades that you can access after a run. But the main objective is to go as far as you can until you die. And obviously, you don't want to die, but that is how you progress eventually in the game. Dying can happen two different ways. Either your character can lose all their health points, or you can run out of cards. So either way, if you run out of cards or if you lose all your health points, you would lose that run, and then you go to the post run. And so when you die, the screen will pop up showing you different rewards that you've achieved, depending on how far you've made it or how many things you've killed or other things that you've picked up along the way. And so there'll be some different rewards that you'll see. There'll be some that are temporary, some that are permanent. The temporary ones are really interesting, and this is where the synergy comes in with this game, is because your temporary rewards are going to boost the next run that you do. So that might be you're going to start the next run with 10 more cards, or these cards, or things like that, or you'll have these powers that'll really help you in your next run. So they're only going to be good for the next run, but if you like close the game and come back the next time you do a run, that's going to be stuff that you have when you do your next run. And then some of the other rewards are going to be permanent things that you can access in the main menu in your profile, and these are going to be toggled abilities, and we'll talk about the different intricacies of these. So let's start with just talking about battle. So this is going to be a card collecting and card using battle system, and so all of it is going to depend on what cards you have in your deck. Now, you're going to get introduced to some basic variety at first. Most cards that you come across are going to be one use, and what that means is you're going to use it and then it's out of your deck. So this is not going to be a situation where you're like building up your deck and it's like heart of the cards, these are my cards. You're going to constantly be using cards and they're gone. So you're going to need to constantly replenish yourself with more cards. To start, your hand size is going to be 4 cards, and then if you use one of them, it'll refill, and you might use 2 of them or 3 of them or all of them, and then it'll refill with 4 new cards each turn. And so how you use cards or the way that they're used has some variation. So like I said, a lot of these are going to be single play, and what that might mean is you use it and it's gone, but that also might mean that you use it and that also ends your turn. So some cards you can only use 1 card. Others might have a situation where it'll have a little notification on the card that says you can play this and then play again, meaning you can play another card. Some cards will have situations where you can play duplicates of the same card, like your basic one, the sword. It has a special thing that says you can play as many sword cards in your hand as you want, and you can keep attacking different enemies. And then as you get to further advanced stuff, you'll get cards that will return to your deck. So you will have cards that actually do return to your deck, but that is not the default. So some of the different card types that you'll come across, you know, physical attack, magical attack, ones that can heal you, ones that'll give you a shield, all kinds of things like that. But all of these are going to have variation, and they're going to be based on what is on the card. So some of your physical attacks are like the sword, and these can attack one enemy right in front of you. So if there are 3 columns of enemies, you can choose to use a sword on any one of the ones in the front row. There's a bow, which is also a physical attack. It can damage any enemy that is in sight. So what you're going to find out is that 3 rows deep is going to be how many enemies you can see. So a bow is kind of like a ranged attack. And then you'll have things like the axe, which attacks all enemies in the first row that are like right in front of you. A whip, you can hit any enemy that is visible to you and it pulls them to the front of that column. A dagger can instantly kill an enemy regardless of any buffs it might have. Fire can kill 3 enemies in a single column from in front of you all the way 3 deep. And then all kinds of other things that you'll see. So I really like, and these are just some of the basic cards, so I really like the basic variety that you see. And then once you start to see advanced things and ways to better the cards that you have, it really can get pretty extensive. And like I said, a lot of what you're doing is going to be using cards, and they're going to be gone once you use them. So you're going to consistently be getting new cards. Primarily, you're going to do this by opening chests. Now, chests, just like enemies, just like boulders, are going to serve in a space on the grid in that conveyor belt. So if you see a chest that gets exposed, you want to find a way to get that chest all the way up to the front so then you can open it. Chests are great because they're going to give you a couple different options for packs of cards that you can choose from, and how many in each pack is going to depend on what the card type is. So for example, you'll open a chest and you'll see 4 options, and it'll be like you can grab any 2 of these options, and it's like, okay, you can take 5 swords, 4 bows, 2 fires, or 3 axes. That's kind of giving you a window into sort of the rarity or the benefit of each of those cards, but also depending on what you might need in that situation. Something else you'll be able to do is steal cards from enemies, and it's not so much that enemies have a deck, but the cards that you see are actually going to be linked to the different types of enemies. So there are ones that have swords, ones that are ranged, and so if you get a card that allows you to kill an enemy and steal a card from it, if you're killing like a ranged person, then you're probably going to get a bow card. And the enemies that you come across, so just some basic info. So most of them are going to be 1 hit and they're killed. Some of them may have shields that block from physical attacks. Some of them may have mirrors that block them from magic attacks like fire or thunder. And then some of them may have armor, which means that it takes 2 hits to kill them. So all of this you'll see on the grid as you move the cursor around. It'll visually show you when someone has armor or a shield, but then it'll kind of explain it, which is nice. Some of them are going to be melee attack. Some of them are going to be ranged attack. It's going to matter where they're placed. So for example, if you have someone with a bow and they're in your line of sight in the 2nd or 3rd row or something like that, they're going to be able to attack you. But if you have someone with a sword and they're not in the front line, they're not going to be able to attack you. So the same rules that apply for you and the cards that you use are going to apply from the enemies and how they can attack you. And then quickly, as you start to see new enemies, you're going to see some variety of special cases. Some of them that might be able to move, like you'll get enemies that can jump over other enemies on their turn. Some that can kind of plant traps that will be in the conveyor belt that if they come to the front, they'll automatically hit you for a certain amount of damage. So all kinds of basic things. And then again, as you get to more advanced things, there's going to be a lot of special cases that you see. They're going to be enemies that you can't attack directly, and you're going to have to attack them indirectly, or you're going to have to kill multiple at the same time because they regenerate. So all kinds of different special cases that you'll come up with that really kind of challenge the limits of how you're doing combinations and strategy. So speaking of strategy, again, the main purpose of what you're doing is enemies, killing them and moving up the conveyor belt. Now, when they move up is also interesting because if they are in range, they can attack you. But if you end your turn and they're not in range, they can't attack you. So it can be a little tricky, but what's going to happen is if you attack with something like a sword, because you can use multiple swords, if you kill an enemy in the front line with a sword and you're able to continue with another sword attack, it's going to push the conveyor belt front, so then you can attack the next enemy. But if you use a card like the axe that attacks all the enemies in the front line, that will end your turn. And then so whenever your turn ends, the enemies can attack. So whoever's in range, wherever they are, they will attack. So if you happen to have a row of melee enemies in the front and then a row of melee enemies in the second row, and you kill all the melee enemies with an axe, that will end your turn. But because at the end of that turn, no one was in the front line, none of those melee guys, they couldn't attack. And then so they do progress forward, but then it starts your turn again. So you have to get used to it. I don't know if I'm explaining it really well, but once you start to see it and see the pattern of when they move forward and when they don't, and then when it allows them to attack, you'll start to get the hang of it. Again, you're going to constantly be using cards, and if you run out, you die. So when you see a chest, that's going to be a big thing. There's also going to be gem spot harvest, and we'll talk about gems and how they play in. These are all going to serve a place in the grid, and so as you're starting to see what is in what column, you're going to start to strategize, okay, I want to pull that one forward. I don't want to pull that one forward yet. And then what's also cool is you can see for three rows deep, and then after that, you don't have enemies that are exposed or that can attack or that are aware of you, but you can start to see like shaded outlines of them. So you can actually see like four or even five rows deep of what's coming next, but it's going to be a little blacked out. But if it looks like the shape of a chest, you're like, oh, I'm sure a chest is coming there. So you can see it. And then the other strategy thing is I would suggest that you leave while you can. Like I said, once you get the stairs to the front row, all you have to do is interact with it and then you go on to the next level. And that might get you out of a jam. You might want to weigh this because if there's like a chest or something behind an enemy, you might want to keep trying to attack enemies to get to the chest before you leave. But you also have to weigh, you know, where you're at with your health and things like that. And then let's talk about rewards and upgrades. So there are a bunch of different things on the screen on the left side. You've got your health, but then you have two different icons that have a number on them. One is like a blue star and one is like a red kind of rhombus or random shape. And so the blue star and the red shape are for two different currencies that you're going to accrue as you're going through the levels. The blue stars are for anytime you kill an enemy, and the red symbol is for anytime you pick up gems. And both of these are going to have numbers on them that are counting down. And what happens is when you get them down to zero, you'll get something special that happens. So for the blue stars, when you're killing enemies, this is essentially how you're leveling up. So when you kill enough enemies, you will instantly go to the level up screen, and then it'll show you like four or five possibilities you can choose from of attributes for you to level up. So for example, this might be things like upping your max health or upping your hand size. And what's also good is when you upgrade any of these, it will also give you a buff. So for example, upping your max health by 10 will also refill your health, which is really nice because you might be in a jam there. Also on this screen, you might have an option to not level anything up, but to open a chest where you can pick two packs of cards. So again, it's going to be a lot of strategy there. The other mechanic is interesting because the red shape with a number corresponds to how many gems you've picked up. Now, I've talked about gems. What you're going to see is sometimes either if a boulder was destroyed or sometimes it's just sitting there in a grid space, you'll see like three or four gems just sitting there. And then if that spot gets to the front, you can interact with them and pick up those gems, and they're going to count towards this meter. And this meter, when it fills up, well, again, you'll instantly go to a different screen, and then it'll pop up options for rarer cards for you to instantly take and put in your deck. Really cool stuff here. A lot of different things happening at the same time, ways for you to buff your character, buff your deck, and a lot of the rare cards that you get are going to be ones that when you play it will return to your deck. So really cool stuff there. Something else that you'll come across is you'll start to see enemies populate in the grid that are bigger or larger and tougher than some of the other enemies. These are going to be big enemies that have special powers, and when you kill them will actually reward you with special powers. It'll be replaced by like a red star there, and then when it gets to the front you interact with it, and then you'll get access to choosing from a couple different special powers. What I like about these powers is these abilities or where you develop card synergy. So one of my favorite ones is like anytime you use an arrow to attack, it's going to attack two spaces instead of one. So you can kill two enemies with an arrow card at once. Or some of the other ones might be like if you use a heal card, it'll give you a specific card back that you can then instantly use. Or other things like if you have a shield, you can choose to throw it and damage like four or five enemies at the same time instead of using it. Again, a lot of different buffs that you're going to be getting, a lot of different ways to strategize depending on where you are in the level, where your health's at, how many cards you have in your deck. Something else you're going to come across in the grid are these sort of diamond-shaped pieces of paper with a circle hole in them. These are going to be memories. And what you need to do is get them to the front and interact with them. And what you're going to get when you interact with them is a little cutscene that's story-based that gives some exposition. But eventually, what these are going to be useful for is unlocking different tiers of permanent boosts that you can activate on your run. So these are going to be one of the things that once you're done a run and you go back to the main menu, you're able to kind of toggle on and off some of these different boosts that you now have access to. And these are going to be permanent, meaning they're always available for you at the beginning of a run, but you'll get access to more along the way, and then you'll also get access to a different number of charges that you can have active at any time. Like, for example, I've done, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 runs. I have access to activating 9 different memories, and the grid that is populated now that I've unlocked has like 20 or 25. And then so I can have 9 active at any time. I can choose which 9. And this is going to have a lot of impact and synergy with some of the other buffs that you have, some of the powers that you're going to get along the level. Some of these abilities are going to be similar to some of the things that you saw with the powers or the card upgrades and whatnot. And then eventually you'll end your run. And like I said, you'll get some rewards. But some of these things are going to be unlocking imaginary friends. Imaginary friends are interesting because when you unlock an imaginary friend, you then have to complete a task. And it might be like get to level 8 or get to level 12 or get to level 8 without healing or without using this kind of card or something like that. So all kinds of challenge runs. And then once you do their task, you're going to be able to, just like memories, toggle on a certain number of imaginary friends that give you certain buffs for that run. But the things that don't carry over are like if you've leveled up your character, leveled up your health, things like that. All that stuff resets. All those boosts to your character reset unless you have access to a bonus that's going on to your next run or unless you have an activated memory or imaginary friend, all kinds of things like that. In terms of accessibility, so when you start the game, you're going to start your own profile, and this is where you will accrue and have access to your different memories, your imaginary friends, things like that, and you also be able to choose your difficulty level. I think you can change it. I'm not sure, though, once you establish it. But the game is pretty adamant about, first of all, the fact that there are 3 difficulty levels, easy, classic, and nightmare. Nightmare, you have to beat the game on classic to unlock it. But the game is very clear about telling you that classic is the way for the game to be played. It's developer intended. Beating the game on classic, I think there's somewhere between like 19 or 20 levels. I've made it maybe to like mid-teens at this point. Like I said, maybe 10 or 12, maybe even higher. And something else that this game does really well is battle info. So when you are taking your turn, you're looking at your cards, you're looking at the grid, you can highlight anything. You can just move your cursor to the card, to whatever enemy, and it will give you all the information that you need. Everything that is contextual that's going to help you. Very similar to Into the Breach. You have all the time in the world. You can really strategize and take your time making your move. For the enemies, it'll tell you how much attack they're going to do, an explanation of if they're holding a shield or a mirror or something like that. And then sometimes there'll be a little more subtle hints, like there'll be quips for like what you should avoid, or it'll say like you don't want this one to get in the front row or something like that, trying to tell you like that's where they're going to do a lot of damage. And then when you choose something that can attack multiple spaces, it's very clear on the grid, it's being highlighted where the attacks are going to land. You can open up your powers menu that show you like everything that you have active. And just in general, the pacing and the tutorials in this game, really good. I think the difficulty is linear, and I think the unveiling of new mechanics is also linear, and it's just very accommodating, very helpful. The first time you see something, you might struggle a little bit, but the game tutorializes it really well. You can toggle them on and off, the tutorials, at least for the opening sequence. And just in terms of the pacing, I always seem to conquer something the second time I see it. Like, I got really far my first run, maybe the eighth level, and something I just looked at and I was like, I have no idea how I'm going to beat that. And then the second time I came in, I'm like, okay, I get it now, and I'm a lot stronger. And this just happened over and over and over again. The second time I'm seeing something, I'm conquering it. I'm not bashing my head against the wall for any particular thing. And again, as you end a run, you're getting all these buffs that carry over onto the next one, whether it's through memories or imaginary friends or just the temporary buffs that are like, your next run, you'll get these cards when you start, or you'll get this boost and this. I just feel like it's very conducive to helping you progress further and further and not fall backwards. Let's talk about the vibe of Iris and the Giant. So let's start with the visuals. So there is something charming about this setup. It's like a storybook construction paper type environment meets like a Shel Silverstein, like especially in some of the cutscenes, like you're going to see sort of like wavy lines or like vibrant things happening around still pictures of characters. And so it's really the coloration that you see the most. It's like these solid construction paper colors on different characters, whether it's their hair or whether it's their armor or things like that. Very similar to Dicey Dungeons in how that coloration works, except it's not like it's overlaid. It's just like one layer. So the separation is just like big chunky shapes that are colored next to other big chunky shapes, basically. As you start to see these characters, you're actually going to see them as like strange, like folded paper or cut paper, the enemies. But compared to you, it's very interesting because your character shape is actually more rounded and fluid, as well as your mannerisms. A lot of the enemies are just very like squared or stoic or a bit strange in their corners, but you seem very rounded and your poses are very kinetic. But the enemies that you'll come across, a lot of these are kind of mimicking like simple animals. You can really tell by the ears what's going on, or at least differentiate them, whether their ears are pointed up or down, but it just looks like some of them are folded versions of other ones with the ears down. This is going to be actually important because some of your attacks are going to do damage to like the same species or the same look of enemy. So you have to be aware of that, and you will start to notice it, even if they're wearing armor or a shield, that a lot of them are going to be the same species, and coloration is also a way to identify that. The environments, again, you're going to see some other things besides enemies in the conveyor belt columns. You're going to see rocks, you're going to see pillars, chests, gems. The way these are shaped or colored, very simple. Rocks specifically or pillars or things that you don't interact with as much or a bit darker shaded to kind of differentiate them. And then the surrounding environments, like the platform you're on, typically they're going to be white or like a lighter color, but very squared. But then you have the backgrounds, and these actually do a lot for me in terms of the visuals. Like there's a couple levels where you're kind of like on top of a cliff or a mountain and you see like the drop off. It's as simple as like where the platform ends or the corner, but you really do feel like, coupled with maybe some sound effects, like you really are on high cliff, and it's like you can see this kind of faint view in the back. And then other times you're going to be in a cavern where you're going to see other things kind of in the foreground that really give it this cavernous vibe. Again, it's very simple, it's subtle, but it is effective. You do notice that there are environmental changes. And then other things will happen, like trying to simulate magic or fire, where you'll just see like paper bits kind of floating, and they'll be red if there's fire, they're kind of floating up. Again, simple, subtle, but very effective. On the cards, the drawings, again, alongside the other coloration we're seeing, very simple drawings of a sword, of a bow, so you'll definitely be able to differentiate them. And then the indicators on the grid, very helpful, like the spaces that are going to be affected by cards or attacks. In terms of audio, I do love the music in this game. It seems like playful, almost childlike, but then super longing. And we'll talk about sort of the sadness in this game, but a lot of beautiful strings, beautiful piano. Really love the music in this game and the sound effects. Really love this with the different cards. Anytime you do an attack, it's going to make a sound effect. The enemies are going to make sounds, grunting and all kinds of things. Just well-rounded, little detail, but really goes a long way. And then finally, let's talk about the themes and the setting. So this is a childlike world. You are in someone's imagination. So the world that you're in is kind of not real. And it's aware of that. Like, it's over the top silly. Like, these enemies are demons. And, you know, their coloration or their mannerisms are kind of silly. You know, you're bringing along imaginary friends. But there's this underlay of sorrow and sadness that you slowly start to understand, especially as you're getting access to these memories that are giving you context of the story. Like, there's this girl, and sometimes, you know, she's with her parents, and her parents are asking, like, why aren't you talking to me? Or she's at school, she's getting bullied. So you're experiencing sort of what she's going through or what she went through, kind of the isolation, maybe a little bit of sadness and depression. Definitely is a down note, but it can be really impactful, because I do notice some symbolism and some metaphors. Obviously, these enemies are demons. I don't know the significance of those, but you're definitely going to maybe see some parallels as you're starting to listen to these memories. She's taking this journey alone, like she's fighting against everyone. And the idea of the giant, I haven't beaten the giant yet. I don't know the significance. I have a pretty good idea. And so you have this giant, and with the memories, it's starting to allude to, like, something is wrong in this person's life or in this person's mind. But I also like the idea of there being a giant and the idea of scale and emotional significance. And this is something that we talked about when we went through Gris or Gris, however you say it. You definitely start to feel that and notice that there is some significance with this large object or creature, and this being in someone's imagination and it having that large impact and the significance of who that might represent. Let's wrap up the conversation about Iris and the Giant. So this is a cute, simple experience, but it has a lot of gameplay depth under the hood. And that's something that I didn't realize before I went into this, and I was really pleasantly surprised. The game has great tutorializing. I think it's super informative and transparent, definitely accessible. Even if you drop this game and don't play it for a week or a month, you can pick it back up and instantly know how things go. It is a roguelite, so it's not my preferred genre, but I mean, I've taken lessons from games like Dicey Dungeons and Frost that somehow had me hooked in some way, and this game kind of has a similar thing. It's really got its fangs in me. I have no problem jumping in and doing another run and learning more about the story, but also getting better, getting further. And I feel like in this subgenre of roguelites that really get you or gamers like me, there's something that this game does, I think, better than most of the games I've seen like this. It makes the do another run so much more rewarding. Like, it's opening a door for you by giving you buffs for the next run or giving you access to more bonuses. So it's trying to encourage you, like, hey, you can keep going and now you're gonna have a better shot because we're giving you more. You're consistently tackling new things, but you're getting it the second time. First time, it's like, oh, maybe I can get this, but the second time you come across it, you just feel like you can run through a wall. I find that I'm always getting further in this game, and so it is giving me that sense of accomplishment and progression that I normally don't get from roguelites, and that's why I come to games like this. In terms of value, I think $15 for the console is perfect. I don't know why the Steam is a little more, but $15 is a perfect price point for this game and so much depth. I think if you find this on sale under $10, that's a steal. I got it for $7.50. Absolute steal. You can get so many hours, so much joy out of progressing through this game. The gameplay depth, the customization, I really think it's just seemingly endless depth. Under that, a really impactful story that I think has some good metaphors, and it's really interesting to learn about. And so I highly, highly recommend this game. Alright, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.